Down-to-earth poetry, I think, describes everything I write, but I was more selective for this audience. You'll hear poems, all short ones, some of which mention soil specifically and talk literally about dirt. Others talk figuratively about earth and dirt, and some of them do both of those things. Can I change pictures? There we go. Okay, I'm also the proprietor of the Buffalo Commons Press, and if you like what you hear, you can go to this website and pick up some books, mine and others, and I have a few copies with me. The first few poems come from this book. First one is Plowing. Those Indians are gone now, but once in a while I find a flaked stone point, sometimes an earthen mound that still must hold clay-packed bones. The faint outline of a buffalo wallow disappears in the furrow as I erase another moment the land lies holding. Thank you. That'll give you something to do while I find my right pages here. This next poem is called Drought. A lone cow crossing the pasture raises a plume of dust like a contrail scarring the sky. A farmer drops his wrench in a creviced field, and it falls 8 feet below the surface. The landscape is like a plucked fowl. The dust drifts in dimples around each solitary blade of grass and stub of brush. The sheep, disguised as boulders, graze contentedly and drink the shade. Eric and I are from the same territory. I've moved in and out of there several times. And this was a poem I wrote several years ago, moving back to North Dakota, western North Dakota, from other places. And the sensation of soil that is part of that experience. It's called Out of Gas in Dakota, which I guess isn't true anymore, but it was at that time. We drifted northeast, crossing each dry wash that runs out of the shadows, the Black Hills. Night crept slowly as the crickets called for it and the water that marked the bottom of each prairie draw. Darkness burst tangible with the thickness of freshly turned earth. There was an almost perceptible sparkle in the loamy air as we sat in the stalled truck, knowing that this was almost home. And one about the formation of that soil called Badlands Seashell. The bison picture I had were taken in the Badlands, so that's the terrain this comes from. The shadows are like water disappearing into secret places. The darkness drags down some grains of sand and tips a shell into the sunlight. Winding out of the coils, the song of the seas that made these hills and buried this alive hums curling through my ear. Hands here. As might be clear, I spent my adolescent and young adulthood working for relatives who farmed in central North Dakota. And I went to a golden anniversary of some of them a few years ago, and this poem came out of that experience. Golden anniversary. Gathered in this church basement, almost like today, gathered in this church basement in this small town, surrounded by strips of fields and cat-tailed sloughs, in the center of North Dakota, are my farming uncles, their hired hands and neighbors, the heroes of my childhood. I want to tell my son their feats, but he sees only tired old men, balding heads unprotected by their caps, dry voices crack during the testimonials, bones show through where muscles used to bulge. I see these shoulders could no longer carry me. My son wonders how they ever could, but I will think of them as giants,
even when they are in the earth.
My thanks to Rollborg for that. Ending line. He saw things very clearly. This poem is called Erewhon. If you'd see it, you'd see it's nowhere spelled almost backwards, kind of like Samuel Butler did it for his utopian fiction. Erewhon. This is right south of Eric's home. With the long, lazy curve of O'Keefe's roads, the Scoria Trail suns itself across the ridge above Sully Springs. It crawls through the odor of sulfur, crossing the shining rails by the bobbing heads of oil pumpers. Pronghorns winter in the valley, their telescopic vision reading that red road winding through nowhere. And this is a little image of along the highway, one of the rest areas west of Bismarck and Mandan. Also a Custer camping ground, twilight at Hailstone Creek. Awaiting harvest, the ripened fields of sunflowers march like armies of alien cyclops, each one bowing east, keeping its darkened eye upon the earth. And I mentioned Georgia O'Keeffe in an earlier poem, and I have another view of her landscapes as applied to my territory. In her paintings, buildings become translucent shadows infused with light. Bones blossom, flowers unfold like women, and wrinkled hills are living flesh, burned clean by the white day's eye. It's going the wrong direction. There we go. A few years ago, I had the opportunity to travel in China, and a few years after that, I had the chance to teach in China for a semester at Northwest College of Agriculture and Forestry. So it fits right in with being here today. And this first poem is a poem about a train trip across the northern part of China from Beijing to Xi'an, which is in the central area. If I could read my own writing, I'd be dangerous. Now I have to cheat and look at the table of contents here. Between bad writing and poor vision, well, let's see here. Here, I'm wasting a whole minute. There it is, yeah. Okay, 52. Right. I was crossing most of northern edge of China from the west coast to the interior. Along the Yellow River, following the Huanghe, Beijing, Luoyang, Xi'an, our guide points to the bricked walls set with wooden frames and wooden doors opening into hillsides. People do live in caves here. I'd heard so, but didn't believe it. Vineyards, orchards, and paddies flash greenly by train windows. Roadsides and flat-roofed houses are threshing floors heaped with grain. Winter greenhouses, three waist-high walls of clay, are beached whales with arched ribs stripped of plastic flesh in the summer heat. Scattered across the countryside are thatched sheds on stilts, shelter for tillers and living scarecrows protecting the harvest for human use. Terraces climb the slopes of the valleys step by step up the mountainsides, broken by infrequent trails and eroding watercourses. In mounds papered with white flowers lie the recently departed. After a year, commemorated in stone, the dead inhabit the coulees of the ochre earth. And one more from that experience, which connects to Wisconsin as well.
There it is. Lee River karsts, those unusual geologic formations. Wilder than the Wisconsin dells, the river sparkled with water, sprinkled with water buffaloes and bamboo rafts, wanders amidst limestone towers. This is the land of hanging burials and gray cliffs watermarked in black. As elsewhere in China, the imagination is trained to see the etched outlines of horses on the cliffs, interwoven dragons blowing clouds through the sky, the backlighted city in the reed flute cave, the stone beast drinking the river at the elephant's trunk. And I'll close with a few short ones from my most recent book. This is called Yellowstone Basin, a place I've visited a lot lately. An astonished elk skull gazes from the depths of Morning Glory Pond. Sapphire pool where the sulfurous air transforms trees to driftwood bones beckons like a Pacific lagoon. Teapot geyser looks drab as Dakota Badlands, and secret spring bubbles pleasantly. As I dip my feet in the tepid fire hole, suddenly the teapot sings, sprouting to treetop height. Like the collapse of volcano into cauldron, or the once-a-decade bellow of steamboat, at dragon's mouth, I am transfixed by Earth's arrhythmic breathing, randomly pulsing as if alive. And here's a very short geography lesson for the western half of the U.S. Trans-Mississippi. Beyond the Father of Waters stretch sandstone and sagebrush ad infinitum. A continental spine of solid granite, then sagebrush and lava spread to the western sea. And I lived for a while in the Red River Valley, the bottom of Lake Agassiz. Here's one poem about that. Flat Earth. As I travel the ancient floor of Agassiz, the only hillock breaking the horizon is the mountain of sugar beets at the processing plant. Later, dunes of old beaches rock in tidal rhythms of the pulsing heartland. And I'll close with the poem that began it all. Eric saw this last Christmas time. Said, oh, you write poems about soil. Maybe you should come and be part of this. So this is the one that kind of completes the circle and brings us back to here. It was written in South Minneapolis. Wildlife Preserve. On the wooded river bluff, school children flash by, bundles of joyful noise. In the wake of silence, ducks murmur on the pond, and leaves brush each other on their way back to the soil. Thank you.